Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, the go-to podcast for CPA firms seeking transformative insights. I'm your host, Lawrence Whittam, and with each episode, we'll uncover key insights, best practices, and invaluable resources tailored for CPAs. From trending strategies to diving deep into outsourcing and offshoring, our experts will help in all areas of your business.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Business Beyond Borders. I'm here for an exciting topic today that everybody knows this is a challenge in the industry, in the profession itself. And it's not one that is, let's say, new to the profession. It's been here for a long time and it's been discussed, but we've got people here who can actually help you implement it to make sure that you're having a better culture within your firms, you're having a better life. And that is talking about getting firms down to this 40-hour work week, the normal life, focusing on a bit more of life first, work comes second to that extent as well, not just for the team members, but also for the owners of these firms, right? And somebody that's really been driving this area and combating somewhat of this challenge is Geraldine Carter, who's here with me today. And again, really happy to have you on and would love to pass it over and just if you can give everyone a bit of an introduction about yourself, if they don't know you and what you're doing in this area.
Sure. And hi, Loris. Thank you for having me. So I work with single owner CPAs in the mid six figure range to help them get down to a 40-hour week and eventually down to a 25-hour week. I'm not a CPA. I have an engineering degree. I started a business with a friend about 15 years ago, and because of my degree, I fell into the finance and operations role and had a heck of a time trying to get the numbers that I needed from my accountant and my CPA in order to be able to make business decisions. And it slowed our growth down in a way that it was frustrating to not have the numbers that I needed at the ready. And once I exited that business and now here working with CPAs, I understand why it was so challenging to get what I needed. And in working with CPAs, one of the things that I help them do is focus on what it is that their clients really want from them and to help reshape how that gets delivered and focus really on solving the client's problems so that they can charge more, so that their prices go up, value goes up, and hours go down. And that's really the progression for getting down to 40 hours.
And even better, the 25-hour range. So that's the exciting part. So I want to hear some firms that are down to the 25-hour mark. That's an achievement right there. So now can you go into it a little bit just from this whole how do firms should even start looking at getting down to a 40-hour work week? Let's say, and we're in the prime time right now. We're talking in tax season, so great time to be talking about it. How do firms even start those steps together?
Yeah. And even to whet your listeners' appetite, some of my clients are even down at 15 hours and one is even down at 5 hours. So,
and making money, I would assume. Yeah.
Making more money. Yeah. Because what happens is the more you get your hours down, the more the revenue has room to go up. Usually people think it's the opposite, that they have to work more to make more revenue. But revenue doesn't come from work. Revenue comes from value, and thinking that revenue comes from work and doing work for time over clients is like thinking that time comes from your watch. So we really want to focus on value for clients, and in getting the hours down, it enables the CPA to focus on creating value for clients, and that's what drives revenue up. And so that's why we get the hours down first so that we can focus on value and then revenue goes up. So back to your question, what are first steps if people are in the middle of tax season and they're working 80-hour weeks right now and they're thinking, what is she even talking about? Is she from Mars? So where I start with my people is really understanding what kind of firm they want to have. And there's more than one answer. There are lots of business models for CPAs that are viable. There's not just one path. So we need to understand, do you want a tax-heavy factory, or do you want a more steady stream, monthly recurring kind of accounting practice? Or do you want to be doing project work? Or do you want to be doing more consultative work? What is the nature of the work that you really enjoy, that lights you up, that you want to be doing? And who are the kinds of clients that value that kind of work and the outcomes that come from that kind of work? And then once we understand that, then we can say, okay, who of the clients do you have in your existing roster match that kind of work? And who in your existing roster don't match that kind of work? And what I do with my clients, because we don't want to take the risk of blowing your hole in your business by just firing 60% of your clients in one fell swoop, we break things out into five buckets. Who are your best clients? Who are your likely keep clients? Who are your definitely get rid of clients right now, yesterday? Who are your, I probably want to let go of clients, and who are the ones you're not sure of yet? And then we just start with the definitely disengage right now. And we just take things step by step as we reprice and repackage your top end clients. So we're doing these two things in lockstep so that we're de-risking the transition.
So what do you see from that firm owner perspective as why this is difficult from a concept perspective, right? To bring into the firm. And like you said, I mean, you're not going in and disrupting everything and approaching everything at once, because there are a lot of different factors here that come into play, right? So, but why, what do you see as like the main stopping point for firms even taking that first step towards this?
Yeah. The first one is that most owners in this situation are just way too busy, full stop. When you have all kinds of production work and clients beating down your door, it's impossible to focus on making these big decisions. Moreover, these decisions come with a fair amount of uncertainty. And when your brain is trying to figure out what to do, it branches in so many directions that it just explodes. And it's like, oh my God, I can't even figure out how to solve this. And in order to, and the CPA is like, they just go back to doing production work.
Yeah.
So that they can feel like they have gotten something meaningful done. And that production work actually needs to get done if they're, you know, if they have 60 hours of work going on. So there just isn't enough brain space available for them to actually sit with these problems. So it feels really scary, but the first thing we need to do is rip off the Band-Aid and oftentimes immediately disengage 15 sometimes, but not in one fell swoop, 30% of clients. Typically, we end up disengaging at least 30% of clients, and over the course of a year, sometimes 50, sometimes even 75% of clients, depending on the nature of the work the CPA wants to go into. But busyness is the first killer. And the second one is fear of niching. And I totally get it because I've been through it. A lot of CPAs, when you say niche, they feel like they're in a straitjacket and they go, yeah. And I get it. It seems like it's going to be limiting, but there's endless opportunity once you head down the path of niching. But again, there's so many decisions in here that branch that, and they're too busy. They just have to get back to production work that they just can't make the commitment and stay with it long enough to see it through. So it makes perfect sense. And it causes them to just stay on this busy, busy, busy treadmill where they're just getting underpaid, they're getting overworked, and they're suffering.
Yeah, I mean, and I've seen the niching side, right? And I see the argument from that, the sales aspect to some extent, right? Again, they typically, a lot of these CPA firms are somewhat generalists, right? They generally bring in clients, they get referred to them. So they're typically from a wide range of professions and industries, right, that they're already working with. So now it's, and again, even just that, hey, I have to drop 15 to 30% of clients. That's going to affect me in this much of revenue wise. Like how do, like now I just have to what face suck up the bill essentially, like for the next, I have built that. Right. So yeah. What is that first step, right? To even just get them comfortable with that. Right. And again, I'm sure it's not an easy answer by any means, because it's somewhat of a mindset. It's going to vary from person to person, but Can you walk us through a little bit of like, how do you really get through that initial step?
Yeah. And I get the, I built that, right? And that is it's hard to let go of some of those clients, especially the ones who may have been your first clients who put their faith in you when you were building. One of the things that really helps is when we start doubling and tripling prices. And the CPA goes, oh my gosh. I thought that I was going to double my prices and all my clients were going to head for the hills. But what happens is that I double my prices. I sent out a letter. And similarly, we only do this to 15% at a time because we do swatch tests on pricing so that we don't risk overshooting or undershooting. We learn from what the marketplace is willing to pay. And when they send out that first pricing letter and they're, you know, sweating bullets behind the scenes, but 90% of clients say, sure, no problem. The CPA goes, oh my gosh, holy cow, are you kidding me? Yeah. So then in the next round, we bump up the price even more, just depending on where they start. Maybe it's another 30 or 40%, or maybe it's triple the original price, just depending again on where they started. And when they see the people coming in saying, yeah, no problem. Like, I've been wondering when you were going to raise your rates, or thank God, I've been feeling guilty about underpaying you for years. And when you hear your clients start saying things like that, and you see how much more revenue you're bringing in for the effort, it makes it so much easier to go, you know what? I love these people on the bottom of my roster. I really appreciate that they've been clients for years, but I need to make some changes. And the only way to make changes is to change something. And that makes it so much easier to let go off the bottom. Or the other thing that happens is because they're bringing in so much more revenue, they finally actually have enough cushion to make a decent hire to take care of the extra workload.
Yeah, and I would say it's, and the big thing there is it's not about just kicking them to the curb as well, right? At the end of the day, there's other professionals that will be a better fit, right? So you can set up a referral partnership. You can set up, hey, listen, I can't service you now, but let me introduce you to XYZ. I know that they can do great work. This is who I go to, but it's just they're a better fit for you now based on my development and your development, right? So it doesn't have to be like, no, we're just culling them. We're getting rid of them, right? And I will say from, I know that, just remind everybody like the size of the firms that you typically are seeing and working with for this.
Yeah. So the most of the firms I work with are in the mid six figure range. I have private one-on-one clients who tend to be at the early seven figure range. The folks in my mastermind program tend to be between typically 200 and 600,000 of top line revenue.
Okay. And to give it some other perspective there as well, like, again, I sat for years in different alliance meetings with firms in the 7, 8, 9 figure ranges. And I will say that the managing partners would get up some of these last year and the year before, especially. And they were talking about, again, giving price increases. And they were personally very shocked at the number of firms that, like, they were expecting these clients to run for the hills, right? Yeah. And they would come back and they were deliberately trying to get rid of some of them. And they would come back and be like, we've doubled your price. And they would say, yes, I'm happy with that. Don't worry about it. Right. And it's not just at the small firm, it's at the large firm and the mid-sized firms as well. Like, everybody's doing it. And again, taking these steps, because really we have to, right? I mean, this is where we're bringing the profession up to where it should be already. And I think there's different reasons why we're seeing it more and more, partly due to the staffing problems in the industry and these types of things. But They're just things that come up, right? That doesn't mean that that is the root cause of it. The root cause is that we've been underpricing ourselves, right, as the profession itself. And you could probably attest to that more than me.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things in there. One of the things is using price to manage capacity. And this is a, I don't want to say mistake, but I see this happen commonly. I think it's a pitfall to avoid. Because what will happen is the CPA thinks, if I double my prices, surely half my clients will leave. And then that will help me get under capacity. But what happens is that you double your prices and 90% of your clients stay. And in your price increase letter, usually the reason cited is, hey, client, in order to serve you better, we are making changes to our practice, which means we are reducing our client load so that we can serve you better. This new level of service will come at a price increase, and the price is X. So if you send out that letter saying, hey, we're making changes to our practice, we want to serve you better, you deserve to be served better, and then you double your price and then 90% of your clients stay, you shoot yourself in the foot, because now you still have the exact same workload. The service doesn't improve and your clients are expecting better. They're paying twice as much and now they're pissed.
Yeah.
So that's a pitfall to avoid. If you are wanting to get your capacity under control, you have to decide how many seats you have on your bus And when your bus is full, it is full. This is why I do price testing and swatches so that we can balance clients coming in at the right prices so that the revenue stays steady as the client load goes down. The second thing is that it is good for your best clients to regularly prune your client roster. The risk that you take if you don't is that your best clients will leave and you are left with your worst clients.
Now, and I would say just somewhat of another analogy or picture to paint to some extent that I've used is I see firms that, and again, professionals that really see a glass full, right? They'll keep going and they'll keep going and keep going until they're literally overflowing to the point where, again, we're hitting 60, 70, 80 hour work weeks before they choose to then hire somebody else. But now they have no time to train, right? And they have no time to really work on the business during that portion of time. So again, that comfort level needs to be in that, no, you actually need to get yourself down to 30%, like, or 30 hours of work, because 10 hours of work should be spent on the business anyway, at least at that stage. And then you need to be able to scale. So what have you seen, like, as firms have started implementing your advice and your programs, how are they managing that capacity? Because I feel like a lot of them, there must be a good portion of them looking to continuously grow as well. So what are they doing to make sure that they also don't get into the rat race of, okay, they get a staff member and now the staff member leaves and now they're in, have to replace that staff member. And
yeah.
What do you see?
So a really common trajectory, if for a CPA who's been working 55, 60, 70 hours a week, a rule of thumb is that it takes 4 months for every 10 hours to get down 10 hours. So if you're working 60 hours a week, it's going to take you 8 months just to clean that up and get it under control and tame the chaos. Once you get down to 40 hours, while maintaining your revenue stays in exactly the same place it typically goes up. But that's not the focus. The focus is sanity, right?
Yeah.
So once we get down to 40 hours, it takes 8 months, then they start looking and they think, okay, they are not even thinking yet about adding staff because they still don't have the bandwidth to add staff. And staff is a very expensive mop for inefficient processes. And a lot of CPAs have inefficient processes, which makes perfect sense. You're working 60 hours a week, and you have clients beating down your door. You don't have time to dial in your SOPs, to improve your systems, to figure out how to make your steps super smooth and consistent across your staff, how to automate steps. There hasn't been time for that. So when they get down to 40 hours, the thing that we do next is really focus on systems, smoothening those out, making them consistent across staff, looking for places to automate. And it's only once they get down to 25 hours that they go, okay, now what's next? And what most of my clients find is that they find themselves in such a nice, comfortable sweet spot where they're bringing in plenty of revenue, their workload is enjoyable, it is calm, they've had room to give their staff raises. They now have time to go on vacation for like 3 weeks abroad. That they think to themselves, do I actually want to hire anybody else? And so often the answer is, I'm just going to hang out where I am right now because I've dialed everything in. I have the money. I have the time. I don't need more. And if I add more, I'm just going to disrupt things and have to figure it out. It's not the solution to anything. So most of my clients find that once they get into their sweet spot, they are good.
Yeah. And that's funny you say that. It's a, there's a young professional and she created a business probably 3-4 years ago. Again, similar line, not quite fully in the CPA world. She's not doing everything that she's not doing the attest work. She's not doing the tax work as much. She's really focused on the CAS work. And I had sort of said to her, I've got some prospects that I could throw away and things. And she was like, not interested. So, when I dug down into it, I was like, and she explained like how much she was working and she was like, but I'm making more than all my friends. I don't need to make any more. I'm doing what I need to. I enjoy the clients I'm working with and I just don't want to grow anymore. Right. I may replace one of these clients eventually, but I don't want to deal with more people as well. Right. So they're clearly different mindset and different goals for people. And I think that's also, you got to be true to yourself in some sense as well, to be like, okay, this is really what I want.
Yeah. And similarly, I can think of multiple clients who are the ones who are down at 15 hours a week, 5 hours a week. They are good. And the time spent with their loved ones and their families while they have those, while they have those days, those hours, means more to them than any amount of growth that they might bring into their business. So I think this is where there's a huge opportunity in the accounting space to be able to have a greater appreciation. I don't want to say work-life balance, because I don't think that's it. I think it's really about deepening the understanding of value, and that revenue comes from value creation for clients. And that's where the focus needs to be. And that the work that gets done is simply the delivery on what you promised for your clients. And it doesn't matter to the client how long that takes. It matters to your profit margins, but not to your client. And it doesn't matter to your price. Your client cares about the value, and that's what they're basing their decision on relative to their price. So really in your business, you have three problems. You create value, you price effectively, and that takes care of the revenue. And on the hours side, you deliver efficiently. And yeah, that's it. That's all you have to think about. And once you meet your goals, great. You can decide what you want to do from there, and there's no right or wrong answer.
So now let's think about it from a macro perspective. I would love your opinion on the profession itself. Like, let's say if we're able to get everybody down to that 40-hour work week, right, and comfortably, what impact do you think that will have on the profession? And again, the people looking into the profession, into coming into this as a career, and also looking at, again, other professionals at different levels of their career already looking now into the accounting profession. What do you think that would do to it?
Well, I think that when accounting firms are making this transition, I see it happening certainly from the bottom up. It seems like it's taking quite a while to percolate up to the upper levels. As accounting firms and as accountants are compensated for the value that they can create for their clients as they become well paid for that expertise and for the time that they have put in to be able to make a meaningful impact in the lives of their clients and work fewer hours, that makes accounting a more attractive profession and a more attractive career. So I think that as this transition happens, it'll make the account, like, how could it not make the accounting profession more attractive to those who are looking in from the outside?
So as we sort of come to the hour now and begin to sort of wrap up, is there anything that you would like to share that maybe can help any of the listeners sort of take that first step, right? Just in terms of for themselves, for their firm, what should they do just to even start opening their eyes to this type of, that it's possible, right? What's the first step?
So if they want to start opening their eyes to what's possible, I think the best thing to do is to pick up my 5-day email course. It's called Stop Working Weekends, where it lays out all these concepts that we've talked about today in really simple terms so that they can begin to integrate and assimilate these ideas around value, around pricing, around efficiency, so that they can begin to view their client roster in a different way. And they can get that just by going to my website. It's geraldinecarter.com, and it's right there on the front page.
Okay, perfect. And we'll provide a link so that everybody can get that access to that as well. And where can everybody reach you if they want to talk about this in a bit more detail? I'm sure you're open to the conversations to even just like showcase a little bit more, but also talk through their personal situation, right? Because everybody's different at the end of the day. So, but where can everyone find you?
Yeah. So if they want to hear more of this kind of topic, I also have a podcast. It's the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast. And I can also be found really easily on LinkedIn.
Perfect. And that one is, that podcast is a bit more well followed as of right now, but we're going to get there. We'll start competing down the line, right?
You will get there. It takes a little while.
Yeah. So, but no, please go and have a listen. We're happy to share that link as well. And Geraldine, it's been awesome speaking to you. I appreciate all the again, tidbits as well for firms to actually really take a step towards this. And I think it's, again, it is a big root cause of what is somewhat hurt in the profession, which needs to be changed. And I think we hear it a lot, but nobody really knows how to take that first step. And it's very difficult to actually help implement. So I appreciate what you're doing. And again, please reach out to Geraldine to again, get some help if you need it, right? Taking those first steps. And thank you. Thank you, everyone, for joining Business Beyond Borders. Again, thank you, Geraldine. And we look forward to hearing it from everybody in the future. Feel free to shoot any questions over as well if you have anything. Thanks, Geraldine.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to Business Beyond Borders. I'm Lawrence Whittam, and it's been a pleasure bringing you impactful insights tailored for the modern CPA firm. Remember, the world of accounting is vast and ever-evolving, and we're here to navigate it together. For more resources and episodes, don't forget to subscribe and reach out to our experts. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of your business and explore the limitless possibilities beyond borders.